Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Frank Bove. 27 years of career experience, captain on Engine 6 with Nampa Fire Department, who will be getting made as battalion chief in a few months. Most of Frank's family is in the armed forces, which is the path he thought he would also go down, but was always intrigued with the fire service. At a young age, Frank obtained most of the certifications he needed and applied to Nampa Fire Department and was accepted. Frank absolutely, wholeheartedly loves the job and all aspects with it. It's easy to focus or harp on negative things within the service, but what's the point? Stay focused on getting better and staying positive. Frank is a leader who believes leadership is an action word that also encompasses these three things: communication, trust, and competency. With that, I present Frank Bove.
Well, my name is Frank Bove. I'm a captain with Nampa Fire Department. I've been on since October of 98, so I'll be coming up on 27 years. Absolutely love the job, passionate about the job, passionate about the people I work with. And I got into the fire service. I was like kind of most young men, and this is a big, wide brush to paint with. But I wanted to do the military, wanted to be a cop, or wanted to be a fireman. My dad is prior military. All my siblings were in the military, and that was kind of the plan. And ended up following the fire service route. I was living in Arizona at the time, went to a local community college, got my EMT, some hazmat stuff. Much like yourself, my parents decided to make a big move when I was like 18, 19. And they said, hey, we're going to Idaho. My grandparents, they both passed away, but they lived in a little valley just outside of Nampa called Emmett. And so I'd been up and in the area, but wasn't super familiar with it. And my dad said, hey, this city called Nampa is testing. Why don't you go up there? You'll visit your grandparents and just give it a go. My plan was to get on with Tucson Fire Department. I've got a lot of kids. Now they're grown ass men and women like myself. But they all have gotten on with Tucson Fire. So that was the plan. I figured it was a good set and rep to go up and test in Nampa. And lo and behold, at 20 years old, I tested, made it up high enough in the list to get hired on. So I got hired on right after I turned 21, which is great, because our union, as soon as you get on, you have to buy beers for everybody, after you get on. So it was really good that I could actually, drink the beers that I could buy. Otherwise they would have just taken my money and left me outside, because they're good humans. And that's what that would have, that's what it would have called for. So, so I got on. I've grown up in the fire service. At this point, I've been a fireman longer than I haven't. And absolutely love it. I have never not wanted to go to work. So absolutely love the job. Have been lucky enough to be all over, to go all over the country to different conferences. We talked a little bit before we started recording about conferences. So FDIC, Firehouse San Diego, local with March Mayhem, which is the Treasure Valley Fools, which is an absolutely phenomenal organization. They're doing great things. And I've been into Colorado. I was lucky enough to ride along with Detroit for a couple days. That's a whole story unto itself. That was humbling for sure. Mm-hmm. Super fun. They actually got me kitted out in gear. It's been a long time ago, so I don't think I'll get anybody in trouble, but they got me out, and actually was able to ride along with them, and pulled line on fires in Detroit. It was absolutely, it was a fireman's dream come true, man. It was awesome. So I've gotten to see a little bit outside of my department, the good things that are going on outside of my department. And then also, I think every time I go out, and hopefully this is the experience of most firefighters, is when I'm out at a conference or riding along somewhere else, I always just realize just how good we have it, and how proficient and efficient and just badass the guys that I work with are. That's what drives it home to me. Not to take away from any department that I've ridden with or conferences I've gone to, but it just allows me to reflect on how good I have it. And I think that's intentional by me as well. I like to see the positive side in things. because it's too easy. It's real easy to go down the negative side.
Right.
There's just no fruit down there, right? Like it just doesn't bear any fruit, man. I love the job, man. I love the job. I'm excited, and I feel blessed to work with people that I do. So.
Awesome. Okay. So you apply, you get hired, even though the dream, and it's always funny how like our dream is not what the man upstairs' plan is. You know what I mean? So it's
Sure.
like you had Tucson on the brain, that didn't work. You got on Napa. So did you have some sort of an academy or a recruit rookie school that you had to go through?
Yeah. So at the time, and I'm going to be very honest with you. I'll be fast and loose with dates, mainly because I'm not great with dates. I think I mentioned earlier, lots of sports as a kid. So lots of falling off my bike, hitting my head and the like. So, we had, I think it was a six or an 8 week academy, came out with like our firefighter two. I mean, it's nothing like what they have now. What they have now is infinitely better. In fact, Haskins, Eric Haskins, is actually running our academy right now. He's on a temporary assignment down there. They're going to come out absolutely phenomenal. There'll be monsters coming out. It was a great academy. There was 13 of us. It was the largest academy we'd ever had at the time. Vast majority of the guys I went through, all of them are officers at this point. Multiple are chiefs. So the class of 98, it's kind of like the 98 mafia. Like that whole group has moved up into the upper reaches of our department. Just really good humans. So yeah, it was great. It was a good experience. I had absolutely no experience going into the academy, and I was a
Okay.
child, man. I was a child, no clue,
Right.
living in a rural area. There's like cows and shit all over the place. Like these are not my experience. Tucson is a urban, densely urban area in some areas, and not my experience. I was much more familiar with cactus and making sure I wore the right colors in my neighborhood. And then suddenly I'm in Idaho, and there's what I thought were dogs running with the cows. Turns out those were calves. It sounds absolutely ridiculous, but I'd never really given much thought to livestock as a city kid, and introduced to all these things. So, but yeah, so it's been a learning experience from jump.
Okay. Upon completion and getting your first assignment, which I'll ask, what was your first assignment when you got it? And you got like once you graduated and you stepped foot in the firehouse, was it everything you thought it would be?
I was like actually pretty ignorant to the fire service and to life in general. I was just my dad was in the military. We moved all over the world. So I experienced a lot of different cultures, a lot of different things. But I didn't know a whole lot about the fire service. I knew I wanted to, I wanted to be in uniform. I wanted to help other people. I wanted to do something bigger than myself. I knew I couldn't sit behind a desk. And firefighting checked all those boxes, right? And so I was excited to be there. I didn't know what I didn't know. And so looking back, I think with the perspective of wisdom that I've gained in life experience, both in the fire service and outside of it, having kids, running a business, stumbling through life as we all do. I have a lot more perspective. It was definitely a different time. The folks that I got on with at that time, we still had Vietnam veterans that were in leadership positions, both as company officers, as engineers, and as battalion chiefs. They had a different way of doing things, it wasn't. Yeah, it was different. It was a lot harsher than what we do. Than what we do now. We definitely ate our own. At that point, but having grown up with my dad in the military, my dad's a great dude, never treated me like I was in the military in our family. However, like hard stop, I did get to experience, the on base life, and so the chain of command, things like that, all that made sense to me. It seemed very normal, and so yeah, it was a different time. I was just excited to be there, like legitimately. And so my first assignment was to our station in the South, Station Two. I got put out there because I had my EMT, and a few of the other guys that came on with us still had to go through that process. And so I hit the ground running. I was one of three on the company, and our station two in the South is massive, massive district, and has everything from old folks homes to, I guess mid-rise, has a little bit of, has some commercial, tons of different neighborhoods. We no shit have like log cabins, like full on log cabins in the middle of the city. It's the weirdest thing, with no water, in the middle of the city. So you actually literally have like, tenders come to fires in the middle of the city in that area. Idaho's a different, it's a different place. There's some different nuances to it. But then some really high speed, I guess rural, highways and stuff that are out there. So lots of extrications, farm like machinery, you know, people getting trapped in that, and then just your basic house fires, and just a shit ton of medical calls. So station two hops, and it still hops. It's a very busy, it's our busiest station to this day. Okay. So,
and you know, with you not really having any experience in the fire service prior to getting on, once you got on, did you try to seek out those members that you knew were into the job to emulate?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the guys who's actually just retired not too long ago, his name is Keith Elkins. He's a battalion chief when he retired. Phenomenal dude. One of the funniest humans I've ever met in my life. I patterned a lot of the way I looked at the job after him. And guys, absolutely just a stud, student of the game, really, really into the job. And yeah, I tried to learn as much as I could. Our department is, we've got a special thing going. So we're not only do they pay for our courses, but they actually give us comp time to go to our courses as well. And so, especially in like the first 15 years of my career, any class you put in for, you could go to. And so I was in class constantly from the day I stepped on the floor. Any class that came up, I was single, and we worked a modified Detroit schedule at that time, right? So the one on, one off, one on, one off, one on, one off, 4 days off, as much overtime as possible, as much class as possible. And I would just, yeah, I just rallied, man. I loved it. Like anything I could do, any class I could go to, I would go to. And I ended up in a lot of classes that I probably shouldn't have been in, with folks that were higher ranks. I ended up in like I remember just specifically like a high rise course through like FEMA when I was like 5 years on. And it, like immediately when I walked in, I was like, oh, I'm in deep water. I should not be in there. And it was a bunch of Boise Fire captains and chiefs and a few of our captains. And I mean, they gave me a hard time, but we're open and awesome, man. Like so good. Like I had questions and I just listened, man. That was the biggest thing, was just listening. And just trying to catch anything I could. So yeah, just ignorance to awareness, man. That was it. Just trying to learn as much as possible.
Okay. How long did it take you to decide to promote to the next step, and why?
So we have a set year piece for captain. So you have to have 7 years on the job, or hit your 7 years during the 2 year window that your captain eligibility is there. Like if you pass the test, you have a 2 year kind of block. So if you hit your 7 years in that, then you could promote. So early on, so we were very low on staffing right when I got on. We had a lot of folks, we had a lot of positions that needed to be filled. And we didn't have the experience whatsoever. No time at all. As for instance, we had the truck company I was riding on. We had a step up officer at one point that was like 2.5 years on, maybe 2 years. And then a 6 month guy driving, and then like 2-3 month guys in the back. Like it was the blind leading the blind. Now it was fun as shit. It was super, super fun. Looking back on it now, like completely dangerous and all those things. Right. But it was a lot of really good people that as a group made it happen. And so, and because I didn't know any better, it was like, oh yeah, this is what we do. I mean, the guy was older than me. Everyone was older than me. In fact, when I promoted, I was still the youngest guy in the department. So 7 years on, still the youngest guy in the department as a promoted officer. So that was an interesting dynamic. I qualified to drive, I think, like 9 months onto the job, something like that. So our pumping, all that stuff, the driver operator, and we had an address portion as well. And then I promoted to driver like 4 years in, and then actually my 5th year in, and then I had 2 years as a driver, and then promoted to captain. So it was a pretty quick progression for me. And there's positives to that, and there's negatives to that. It worked out for me, but everybody has their own path and what feels right for them. So.
Okay. So you went from firefighter to you drove for a little bit and
I
then you
drove a
went
little
to
bit.
captain.
I went to captain, yeah, and I think it's a really good thing to drive for a while just to figure out what's going on in that seat. Legitimately not a phenomenal driver. Like I tried really hard, but I'm just I don't some guys I my present driver absolutely phenomenal, loves driving, like loves whipping that engine around. I have full faith in him. He makes my job so much easier because he's really good at what he does. I was always a good driver. It just was not, it wasn't something I saw myself doing long term. I wanted to either be backseat or be an officer. I wanted to be interior. There's so much value to a phenomenal driver, and they can do so much. But it just wasn't, that's not what I guess pushed me along. It wasn't something that I was really into. So I tested for captain as soon as I could, and I managed to promote. So that was a stroke of circumstance that worked out really well. I blew out my ACL like 6 months or 8 months prior to the captain's test, and I don't like to sit still. That made me sit still, and so I was able to really focus on studying. And actually, all the study materials that I made, I actually disseminated to all the other guys that were testing with me. So we were back in the old school ISTA manuals at that time. I think we had some Norman stuff, but I was behind a desk losing my mind. I hated it, and so I just started producing as much study materials as possible, and then I was just getting them out to the other guys. I've never looked at testing like I'm testing against the other folks. I just looked at it as like, let's get the best person for the job. It just came out that I did well enough to promote. So.
Okay. All right. With that being said, I'm going to ask you a question. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
I've got the aggressive firefighter shirt sweatshirt on right now. Aggressive. So that's, it means something different to everybody. To me, aggressive is somebody who's competent at the job, who has a deep understanding of the job, that is on the gas pedal and doing putting it out there for the people that need it. So it is it's not risk for the sake of risk, right? Like that to me is asinine, that's foolhardy. But risking your ass to save those that are inside is what we put our hand up to do. That's that just part and parcel. My actually one of the chiefs when I promoted was ex he started laughing. He goes, "Well, this is great. We're going to save a bunch of money on workman's comp. You're like one of the most injured guys on the fire ground." I took it as a compliment, actually. If you're not dirty at the end of a fire, if you are not tired, if you haven't yeah, if you don't look like a pile of shit, then you probably haven't either A, gotten the opportunity, right? There's different positions where you just don't get to get in there. But if you have the opportunity to do work and you're not doing work, then like we're probably not going to hang out very often. So aggressive to me is giving all of it, but with a foundation of like competency and a deep understanding of the job. So foolhardy is no good, but getting after it because you know you can and because it's the right thing to do, that's aggressive. And I hope that I embody that. That's my desire to embody that. So.
And with you being an officer with your crew, are you finding yourself sometimes having to pull the reins back? Or like I'm sure like if you pull up to a working, a residential structure fire, nothing needs to be said. Very minimal communication because
Right.
everyone on your apparatus knows what they got to do.
Yeah, if I'm lucky enough to have the three pipe hitters that I have right now, I'm probably getting in the way. Is actually like I am the smallest of the crew. The rest of them are big meatheads. I try. I do well to keep myself in shape. Haskins is a smoke diver. The guy's just an absolute stud. It's not a lot is said. And the reason not a lot is said is because the sets and reps that we do, at the station, we do a ton of in-district size ups. We do a ton of pulling hose on occupied structures on the regular. I have no problems pulling line on apartments, on commercial buildings. Like I'm not going to try to get in the way of business. At the same time, if it's 2 o'clock in the middle of the day and we're at a multifamily dwelling on a medical call, or we're just in the area, like we'll stop and we'll pull line. We'll pull dry line to the second or third floor. We'll have stuff on the ground with the knowledge that if we get a fire or we get anything, medical or what have you, we know we break. And we take the nozzles because nozzles have a tendency to get stolen. But nobody wants to drag off, 200 feet of 1¾ inches. So we'll just pile that shit on the side of the road and off we go. So I've never had an issue with people, residents. Like they'll open up the door, their eyes are wide, they're like, oh God, is something going on? And it's like, yeah, something is going on. Like we're gonna be really good at fighting fire in your house. And they're like, excuse me? And it's like, yeah, so you've got a weird setup for a basement access in the back of your residence. You have, this your front yard is really compact. You've got multiple RVs in the front. Like we're practicing. And if something does happen, like we're gonna be really good at your house. And people are like, holy shit. Like, yes. We actually had it's a great story. This older lady I was with, Haskins. And we're on the east side of the city at the time on a different apparatus. Pulled line, this old lady comes out and she's so excited, like this is great. And she's doing the classic old lady thing. She's like, you guys are so strong, like the quasi, like if it was a dude doing it, it would be like creepy and weird, but it's an older lady, so it's like super funny. But the door closes behind her at her own door, and she like starts to get a little antsy, and it's like, what's going on? She's like, I have to go to the bathroom and I just locked myself out. And it was like, what? And she goes, I have to go like number two right now. And so she came out to see us, locks the door behind her. She can't get in. Now she has to take a shit. So we have to then do a little forcible, little soft entry into her home, dive in through a window, open the front door. And so we created a hero moment. She was very happy with us because she was able to go in and go to the bathroom, but it was absolute riot. So she got really antsy very quickly. Yeah, man, they're good, and I don't have to say a lot because we practiced it, because we've had those conversations before. And that's the reason why. If you're not practicing before, if you don't have those conversations, then you're gonna have to, then you're gonna have to have a lot of stuff said on scene because you don't have that in your Rolodex, right? So yeah. So it's the training beforehand, it's the conversations beforehand that allow you to be successful on the fire ground.
And I always like to ask the guests your reason for promoting to captain. What was it?
Totally. The reason to promote was that. So, and you'd asked that before, I totally missed it. The reason to promote for me was that, one, I told you I was not a huge fan of driving. I wanted to get back inside. I wanted to get back inside. I wanted to run a station, create an environment that I would want to work in, right? So I wanted a company officer that knew who I was, knew what I wanted to do, knew what I was doing well, knew what I needed to work on, and that was solely focused on the job. The only way to do that is for me was to promote, was to get into a position where I could create an environment that brought the best out of people, an environment where we weren't sitting in watching TV. And like full disclosure, I love a great movie, man. And if we have kicked our ass all day long and we've got, Sicario going at night, like, dude, I am 100% in. That's awesome. And there's Sundays where like, yeah, stuff gets a little slow, and I'm totally okay with that. There's a historical piece to that. There's just like a just chilling with the boys is a big deal. That's awesome, and that's something that can't be denied. But the TV does not come on during the day. Like that's not a thing for us. Whether we're interior inside the the firehouse, and we have, you know, we have scenarios going on the big screen, or we're outside, we're pulling line, we're doing tech stuff, we're working out. Like, I am by nature somebody who doesn't like to sit still, so we're going to work. We're going to work all day, and we're going to laugh the whole day. We're going to have a great time, and we're going to talk shit the whole day, and those are all those things. Yeah, the only way to have that environment was for me to create it, and so
Right.
that's why I
So,
promoted. So it really didn't have anything to do with, I guess, the bugles. I could really care less. What I really wanted was to create the environment that I would want to work in as a young firefighter and as a driver. So.
And I love the answer because, you know, and I get it, you know, to everyone, each is their own, but like I've heard because I didn't want to work for this person or the pay. Or, you know, unfortunately for some, they
Yeah.
want that title. But I love how you put it was because you wanted to foster that environment that you wanted to work under, because so many good firefighters are working under not so great company
Oh,
officers.
totally. And when I first got on, and I don't want to knock the company officers that I worked for. They all brought a lot to me, and I learned a ton from them. But we had officers that it was by edict, you were not allowed to train unless a captain was there. Like, that was not only said, but that was implemented. So I've always been a little shady when it comes to training. So, like, we just snag ladders off the apparatus and sneak out to the Charlie side of our main station and throw ladders onto the back of the brick building in the alleyway without our company officers knowing. Which seems weird, right? Like, you're sneaking around to train, but I just didn't let it get in the way, and I didn't take it. I didn't look at them in a harsh light. I just was like, oh, this is the way it is,
Right.
and because that's the way it is, I'll just make it happen on my own. So I like rules. I think rules are great, as long as they make sense. And if they don't, then I'm gonna bend them and make them what they need to be. Hopefully my admin doesn't listen to this, because I am going to be a battalion chief, but then I get to assist in making those rules make sense, and that's what I'm looking forward to. So, but yeah, no, a lot of great company officers I worked under, but it just the they weren't taught to look at company officer the way I think that we have the ability to look at it now, right?
Right.
So they just it just wasn't that wasn't the way things worked. They weren't worried about your feelings, because no one worried about theirs. They didn't give a shit about your exposure to cancer. Like, all those things, like, none of those things were even on the radar. So they didn't address them. And I don't fault them for that in any way, shape, or form. It grew me to who I am today. So it's good, man. So, but yeah, the only way to make it better is to promote, in my case. I definitely didn't do it to not work under somebody or to not have someone else get the job. Like, I think that's a, yeah, it's like that whole idea of being mad at somebody, right? Like, it takes from you, but they don't even know that you're pissed, right? The only person
Right.
is feeling anything negative out of that is you. So, like, for me,
Right.
that's wasted energy. It's just not worth it for me. I'd rather just move in a positive direction and make change on my own. So.
Now, with you know, getting ready to step up into the battalion chief, you know, that's a whole nother thing because I'm assuming once that happens, like you're by yourself now, right?
Right.
It's just you in a car. And a whole
Yeah.
different
Yeah.
role.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've stepped into the position quite a bit, but stepping into it and doing it are two totally different things. So I'm not going to tell you that I know what it is to be a battalion chief. The three gentlemen that are doing it now, are all really good friends of mine. In fact, all three of them worked for me at one point or another, either drove for me, or my firefighters. So very tight with them. We'll just speak to the position itself versus to the people, because I think that's the way to go with it. The position itself in the Amplifier Department right now is more of an administrative, more of a managerial type position. Working on in our department's telestaff, so making sure your staffing is where it needs to be, things like that, running supplies. That's all well and good, and that has to happen, and hard stop. Battalion chief should be the training lead. on the department or on their shift, in my view. And so as I'm looking at the battalion chief position, I don't want the position in the way that it is now. Like that's, I didn't test for it to get the position that it is now. Like that's not, I want no part of that position. So I will craft it to be what I think it should be, much like moving into a captain's position, right? Like how do I create an environment where people are excited, where they're happy, where they want to train, right? Where they go to sleep at night because they're just rugged, right? They're tired, they're sore, but they're just happy, right? That's what I'm looking for as a battalion chief. I won't be able to get the FaceTime as much as I can right now with my crew. However, company-wide drills, monthly drills, things like that that I can lead, and it doesn't have to be, high-end like doctoral level like battalion chiefing. It's like no. Let's just talk. We can talk language. We can talk very basic, single family dwelling fires. And I, the only way for them to build trust and to understand my competency is for us to have conversation. And so getting out with the companies, it's like, hey, this is what we have, for us, right? Bread and butter. And people, don't use that term, what have you, but it's synonymous with what we do. Garage fire, let's just talk about it. Let's go through. This is, let me hear your size up. Awesome. Cool. This is what I'm looking for. Sweet. And then we just dive into that. The foundation of a drill can be very basic. What I've found is that the real learning comes in the conversation and the doing of the drill, right? So you can have three or four lines for a drill, and it can last an hour and a half if done well. As not because we need to have an hour and a half of drill time, but because it took that, because the guys were engaged, they're interested, and they were learning. And so coming into this position, I hope to make it a, or not, I hope, I will make it a position that is the lead when it comes to training, and has the ear of my firefighters and my captains, and can be a great conduit to take that message up to admin, and then on the other side, make sure that admin is getting their message down to the troops on ground level. So, but being an advocate for my folks is going to be the biggest piece, and I'm excited for it. I'm super excited for it. So.
And I get it with that position. You gotta visit each station, supplies, paperwork. I get that side, but I
Totally.
feel personally that the other side that gets lost in translation is the fact that yes, you're a battalion chief in rank, but you're also still a firefighter. And I think some of the battalion chiefs tend to lose the skill set because they fail to make sure that they have adequate time to put that gear on still.
100%. And I think the and it happens really quick. And I think it happens with the very best intentions. Like I'm not gonna shit talk on any battalion chief in that role. It happens very, very quickly. Someone always needs to bend your ear. There's always some random thing that's going on. But I would liken it to earlier, you said there probably wasn't a lot of conversation that goes on in your engine when you arrive on a fire scene, right? And I hit on the fact that like conversation and training before is what allowed that to happen. My intention with battalion chief is all too often right now they're inundated with what you call like small fires, right? Just bullshit personnel issues, like all these little nuances. If we have those conversations before, if they have really good expectations for me, I have good expectations for them, and we have clear lines of communication. Those small fires, they still come up, but they shouldn't come to me. They should stay at the captain level, right? They should stay at the senior firefighter level. If we're all doing the right thing by each other, I shouldn't have to know that, Joey is showing up, close to being late on his, like that should never come to me. That's absolutely ridiculous. It's like, no, that's where the senior firefighter steps in, has that conversation, lets them know what those things are. And that's where I want that to be, taken care of. And so hopefully by me pushing in and really giving the not only the expectations, but then the responsibility to my officers to do the right thing and that I'll back them, a lot of that stuff can be taken care of. That'll allow me to be in gear, that'll allow me to be out with the guys on the fire ground, and being there for their training, and then being the battalion chief they need when we have something nasty going on. So and it'll be trial and error, man. I'm gonna make mistakes. I have no doubt I'll make mistakes. But I'm excited the proposition, and I'm hoping to. And I think a big portion too is ritual. A big piece of this is making sure I'm still getting my workouts in and still getting out and doing the things that are important to the job, which is to be on the drill grounds with the guys, and to see what they're up to. We have what we call break two drills, break to rescue, break to vent, break to water, all these things. And they're timed evolutions that every single one of our companies go through. They're filmed, they're done at our drill grounds. It's our training division puts it on. For me to not be there as a battalion chief for every one of my companies, in my mind, would be absolutely out of control, like insane. So, making sure that that to me is the one of the most important things I can do. So, me being there, seeing what they're doing, seeing where they're missing, seeing where I'm missing, that's where the learning takes place, and I'm stoked for that. Like that's awesome. And so, it might mean me working way late into the night to take care of admin stuff, but that's fine. I'm totally okay with that. I'll eat dinner, down at my desk if I have to. I'd prefer to hang out with the folks. But if I can be down there from 8 to 5 watching them do the thing, and it means I'm working late into the night, so be it. Like that's totally worthwhile. And yeah, I'm excited. And occasionally I really hope I enjoy moving line. So hopefully they will allow for a battalion chief to, spray a little water, talk a little trash, and work with them a little bit on technique, because I enjoy teaching, and I enjoy spraying water and doing the thing. So
Okay. One of your good friends is Eric Haskins. So with that being said, how important is physical fitness along with the job?
So, Eric I'm godparent to his kids. I officiated his wedding. He lived with me for like 6 or 8 months, him and his wife. So yeah, I'm very tight with Eric. Phenomenal human. He can run circles around me when it comes to the physical fitness stuff, both in education and experience. I owned a gym. I ran a gym for 15 years. I owned a CrossFit gym with my wife. We had 3 different college courses that were fitness related, and then I've run CWIs, which is our local community college, their fire program for fitness for like the last 7 in partnership with Eric. So very deep into making sure we're physically capable of doing the job, and that's really it. Like if you are not in the type of shape you need to be in to do the job, I mean that statement in and of itself is that's truth. Like if you That's it's really it's a very simple mass, ass moves mass. Like you need to be strong, you need to be capable, you need to be able to be, have the aerobic capacity to not drop out as we're doing the thing. I mean, everybody has their thing that they like to do. We have a lot of guys who run ultras, do stuff like that, mountain biking, are just cardio wizards. We're lucky enough, those same firefighters in our department are also, physically strong as shit. And so you have to have both sides of it. I mean, it's awesome that we discuss it, but in all reality, it should not be even a discussion point. It is a matter of fact, that you have to have the capacity to do the job. I've been on the job a while now. It does feel different, like legitimately. And I remember having these conversations at the table as a young fireman. And guys are like, you have no idea, when you're older, it just hurts, you can't expect the same thing out of me as expected out of you. And I'm gonna give them that it hurts. I'm gonna give them that it looks different, but I'm gonna call bullshit on you can't expect the same thing out of me. Like I don't agree with that. And at this point, based upon my own experience, like I've been injured numerous times on the job. I've been, cut, burned, all electrocuted, all the things, and just have put a lot of wear and tear on my body. It just means I have to be that much more intentional about staying able and capable to do the job. And so, yeah, I yes, it's a discussion point, but the discussion is Why are you not in the type of shape you should be in?
Right.
You know, and every day is the opportunity to get back in the shape you need to be. And it happens, man. It happens. Family, money, you know, injury, all the things. Like, it gets in the way. You just have to decide, you know, that I'm going to make sure I'm ready to do the job. That's the answer. So, yeah.
And you know, it's one of those things where I feel like the fire service kind of, and not in all places, but at least a decent amount I know where the department or administration will harp on you for the wrong attire, but they won't harp on if you botch the stretch, botch the throwing of the ladders, or when it comes to your yearly physical, whatever, you're not quite doing it. It's like, well, you know, we'll see if he needs help, but that's as far as it goes in a profession where the citizens are expecting Superman, Superwomen
Right,
to
right.
come help them through their needs.
Yeah, well, I think that well, it's easier to hit on the clothing aspect, right? That's so much easier. Most departments have clear, objective SOPs on what you should or shouldn't wear, right? So that
Right.
makes it really easy. Like, we've addressed that. And so that allows you to, quote unquote, display leadership. For me, that's more management at that point. Now, if a guy looks like, you know, a pile of ass, you know, his then yeah, let's address that, right? By all rights, again, a chief shouldn't be addressing that. The officer should be like, hey man, like, you look like a bag of milk. Like, you're a mess. Like, get squared away. So yeah, I think those things are addressed, one, because it's easy, and then two, because we have objective things written down. Where it's difficult for most departments is, and this is me speaking broadly and ignorant to a you know vast majority of departments. I don't think any of us know exactly what's going on in every department. But by and large, most departments don't have an annual fitness assessment. Vast majority of departments don't have a physical or a medical assessment even coming on the job. So that leaves you really in a very subjective space, right? And so they may look like, you know, they may look rough, and you know, they got roles where they shouldn't have roles. But if they're not going on fires, and they seem to be going on medical calls just fine, like, how do you address that if you have nothing written down? And so that leaves a very it's a funky space, right? And so our department, and I can only speak to our department, we have a biannual, like, essentially a capacity assessment, that is voluntary. And then we have a medical assessment every year, and we have a pre-hire medical assessment as well. The pre-hire and the medical assessment are extraordinarily in-depth. Your treadmill test, blood's taken, X-rays are taken of your chest, you know, lung capacity, all that stuff is done. Audiology, vision, it's really cool. But that's the medical side. Like, that really has it gives you a snapshot of what they can do. Like, are they healthy enough to do the job or not? Right? Like, that's not a capacity assessment, right? You getting on a treadmill and like and running doesn't say that you're a good fireman. Like, that has not it's it doesn't. It'll give you your VO2 max, which means, like, you have the ability, some aerobic capacity, but it doesn't mean that you can swing an axe or cut a hole or pull a line. It has nothing to do with that. Eric Haskins actually, I mean, essentially from the ground up, put together our O course. And our O course is a biannual capacity. And I'm probably using the wrong terminology, but it's an assessment that we do at the department. It's voluntary. They're actually paying us. This is actually the first, actually, it's going on right now. It's actually going on today. They actually are now paying us to do it. It's like $250. It's just a nod, like, hey, we value you being in the type of physical shape you should be in. So we're going to give you $250 for making sure that you pass this test, right? This assessment. And so it's voluntary. Our union has been absolutely phenomenal with it. There's nothing punitive about it. I think our rates are well over 90% of people of doing it, and they're doing it on a voluntary basis. Like, they're doing it because it's the right thing to do. It's a series of different events done on air, in gear, you know, full PPE. And yeah, it's awesome, and it kicks your ass a little bit. But just gives you like a litmus test as to where you're at. You know, that's it.
Right.
And for me, not only is it allows you to personally know that you're like, okay, I'm feeling pretty good about where I'm at on this, but better still, I'll be doing it tomorrow. My crew, when I go out and do it and I pass through it, they know, oh, hey, Cap's on top of his game. Like it's a nod, right?
Right.
That's it. Everyone knows, like, hey, we as a collective have put together this test or this assessment, and we as a collective know it's a pretty good idea as to where you or how you can operate on the fire ground, because there's skill pieces to it too. Like you're forcing a door, you are throwing a ladder. Like there are actual skill assessment pieces in there as well. It's like, okay, cool. They're on top of their game. They can do work. And that's it, right? We just know it's a nod. It's a nod from me to my firefighter, me to my driver, and a nod back that we all take the job serious and that we're all physically capable of doing the job. And our skills are such that I can do work. It's absolutely awesome. But that is not the norm. Most departments don't have that. I can't speak to other departments. I think it's awesome. I think it's a great thing to do. It's something I hope other departments end up doing something along the lines, but it's a big ship, man. It's tough to move those. So I can just speak to where we're at, and I think it's going well, and I enjoy it. So.
No, I mean, it definitely, you know, the fact that, you know, you guys do the incentive portion to me would make people go like, hey, like you have the rank or the title of firefighter. Let's see if you are continually betting yourself to continue to have that title as well, you know, because like, all
Totally.
right, yeah, I'm a firefighter. I've been a firefighter for however long. Okay, that's great. Hey, let's see you go force this door and you struggle at it. And it's like, well, what are we doing? You know, like the firefighter gets called tactical athletes, right? But if an athlete goes out on the field and performs poorly, the organization can after a while look at you and be like, you're cut. Like, thanks, but no thanks. You know,
Totally.
whereas I feel like we should kind of do the same with us, but then you get in this gray area where, well, HR says this, and I get it. Like,
Totally.
HR should be involved in certain things, but at some point, like, we're all going to hit a part in our career where maybe we're not firing on all cylinders. And I get it, life happens. But to that person that makes that call to 911, they're expecting professionals to show up and fix their problem.
Totally. Yeah, I think there's just a responsibility, an inherent responsibility to be where you need to be to do the job. I 100% agree that the public deserves it. I grant that. For me, the onus is that the men and women I work with deserve it. And
Sure.
so I the public thing is it's a little more ethereal, right? Like it's something that you can't touch and feel sometimes. But what I can touch and feel, and that sounds weird as shit. We're talking about our own folks. But what I can see and what I can experience is that the men and women working with me are capable. Like that's I owe it to them, right? We talk about the brotherhood,
Right.
and it doesn't matter what color you are, what sex you are, any of the things. I could give a shit less. I truly don't care. But what I do care is that you're passionate about the job, that you know the job, and that you're fully capable of doing the job, and that you have my back, because I am giving you those things implicitly. We go on a mutual aid. I don't know you. I'm giving you those things at face value. I'm giving you everything for the other firefighter, and obviously we do that for the citizenry as well. But for me, I just like to narrow it up a little bit and just be like, no, I'm doing it. We always talk about for them. I'm doing it. This is going to sound shitty. I'm doing it for us. I'm doing it for like the men and
Right.
women I work with. And because of that, we are going to be that much better for those folks out there. That's been kind of a little bit of a shift in my own mentality. Not to sound, I just, I mean, I don't want this to come off selfish or weird or self-indulgent as a fire service. The public can be so fickle that to base everything on the public, and I'm not talking about keeping us safe. God, man, I really don't want to misstep on this. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be there to pull people out. I have and will tomorrow. I'm actually going on for a shift tonight at 8 p.m. as an overtime shift on the truck. If something happens tonight, I will give everything I can for a person I've never met.
Right.
The driving factor for me so much is just the men and women I work with. Just probably because it's more present, it gives me more positive feedback. In the state of Idaho, it's an extraordinarily conservative state. Funding and stuff is like really fickle and weird right now. And so there's a lot of negative aspects from our general public that it's just, I'm not a good time. And so for me, I find a lot more positivity in just really focusing on the men and women that I work with, and knowing that us being at our very best in every aspect of our job is going to make sure we give our very best to the public. I have the ability to make change and to guide and to be hands-on with the folks in my department. That's my sphere of influence is my department, I guess, to speak into like a leadership term. And that's where I can make change. That's where I have the ability to make waves. And so that's where I'm going to place most of my focus. So yeah.
Okay.
I hope I don't come off as sounding like
nope.
I don't care, because I don't.
Yeah.
That's not the case at all. But really, where I can make change and where I can really do the thing is with the men and women that I'm lucky enough to work with.
Okay.
So,
no, I totally get it. I get it. All right. Switching gears to outside training. You
cool.
mentioned earlier in your career that you went to as many classes that you can. How
yeah.
important is getting outside of your region, outside of the four walls of your department?
So early on in my career, early on both of our careers, because you're an old head, you've done this for a long time. That was vital because the internet wasn't as robust as it is now. Right. And we'll kind of put a pin in that and come back to it. I think it's really vital to get outside of your department, and be challenged, by other points of view, by other experiences, even just other, accents, man. You go to FDIC or somewhere else, and I'm, as someone from Idaho, I'm just trying to hold on for dear life, just trying to understand what the instructor is saying, and not look like, you know, not look like an idiot in front of everybody. So I think it is. I think it's vital to get outside of it. If you're lucky enough for your department to pay for you to go, that's game on. You know, there's nothing wrong with, and it's something that I think needs to be championed, is that, you know, a group of firefighters do, you know, like a, yeah, you just, you rally and get one hotel room and dudes, you know, and bring sleeping bags and stuff. And you got five dudes in a room. It's going to smell terribly and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, pool your resources and hit FDIC, hit firehouse, you know, hit firehouse, hit these different, you know, local and national level courses, and just go and just be challenged. And I think it's a massive piece. There's a lot you can pick up from it, and there's a lot where hopefully you, while you're there, you see just how good things are at your department, or where you can make some change. So I think it's massive. You need to get out there and see, and be challenged in your own views and what you're doing and what you're not doing. So
absolutely. And to me, it opens up to different ways and techniques that you might not be privy to. Like for me, I remember going out and talking to individuals, and like, you know, before we started, I like through social media, through now, like now, the way
right.
the internet is, like you can see so many things, but like talking to an individual on why do you do it this way? And then they explain
right.
it to you. You're like, oh, and then they're like, well, you could do it this way, but then also here's another way you can do it. And you're like, I never thought of that. And to me, that's
yeah.
what getting outside, finding different tactics, and then bringing it back to your department going, hey, and I'll say this from experience, don't come back saying that everything we've been doing is wrong, because nobody wants
yeah.
to hear that, but go,
no.
Here's what I've learned, and maybe we can modify it to make it work for our own organization.
100%. And I think it's, you said it really succinctly. Like you come back and say, hey, we're doing it wrong, we need to change. You've shot the message. You've shot yourself. Like there's no way. And why would they listen to you? You just like, you know, you just shit on everything that the department's doing. That's unacceptable. I've been a part of, changing our hose, you know, our hose deployment models, myself and I talked about Chief Elkins, Battalion Chief Elkins. We and our training chief, Bobby Jardine, the three of us brought on smooth bores, brought them back, right? And that was a holy cow. That was, I mean, now we've been in smooth bore for, for like 18 years now, 17 years, where that's like holy what we're doing. At the time it was sacrilege, man.
Right.
I had a specific captain that I had worked for, that lost his collective mind at me and threw a water bottle at me while we were training and told me to, where I could go and where I could put it. And then when we changed to smooth bores, I literally had to go into the stations, and this sounds ridiculous, find the automatic nozzles that guys were hiding because they put them back on the engines. I had to find them and like take them off. Like it was nuts. I mean, and we went from like nuts and bolts, like this is why this isn't, this is why we're fighting fire for so long, right? We have automatic nozzles. We're flowing from 70 to like 160 GPM. Like we have no idea what we're actually flowing. We fought a lot of fire. A lot of times it's because we were going in there with like an 80 GPM nozzle, and getting after it. And I was on those nozzles, and yeah, it took a long time to put fires out. And it was, on one level it was fun as shit because you get to see a lot of fire. On the other level, it's like, no, we should go in there and absolutely overwhelm the enemy, right? I have been part of that. I've been a change agent, and but I've also this was part of my battalion chief interview was about change, and I've also felt that the new theory or the new practice, I've felt it as somebody who's done the job and been successful in many ways. When they're telling you like, hey, this we can do this better, there's a part of you, there's an ego piece that's like, well, yeah, but like we've been, does the fire is the city on fire right now? No, yeah, because we put it out. What do you think of that? And speaking specifically to Eric Haskins, I had put together our cross lays, and unbeknownst to him, it was the most amazing thing ever. He's telling me just how shit our cross lays are, just laying into him about how dumb they were and how it could be better and how he has a better idea. He had no idea I was the one that actually had put together those cross lays. And so it was absolutely phenomenal. And every part of me was one, enjoying it because I love the guy. And two, there was a portion of me that was like, there's an ego piece. Like, yeah, it's vanilla because vanilla always, like, everyone likes vanilla, right? Yeah, but what he brought was, in fact, better. So, yeah, we made the move, we made the change. Same thing, we have a blitz line that we work off the back, and our neighboring agency just had a It was just a very small change, but man, it was better, like 100% better. And we changed to that. And so we call it the Caldwell, it's like the Caldwell load versus our blitz line, because it's a nod to those guys. And they're a phenomenal department right next to us. And yeah, there was a time where us taking anything from them would have never happened, just based on no, it's Caldwell, there's no way. And now our department's much more open to doing what's right and what's better. Not for the sake of change, but because it is better and it is the way to go. So, yeah.
Love it. With you getting ready to become a chief officer, so this topic is on leadership. So, and with you currently holding the rank of company officer, what does leadership look like to you? What should leadership be?
Man, I had a really good answer on my battalion chief's test, and so I'll try to bring some of that back. I've thought on this. I've actually been all over the map, not all over the map, but really deep diving to this. The base level with leadership comes to competency, right? You have to know the job, and not just know it, but have a deep understanding of it, right? Frontwards to backwards, the competency piece is number one in my view, and then from there, trust. They have to trust you. They have to trust that you have their back. They have to trust that you're there for the right reasons. Yeah, and that has to be implicit. They have to know that, and it has to go both ways. I have to trust my people as well. And then from there, clear communication. Just being very, very open, honest. At times it's direct. At other times you're going to have to kind of hit it from a little bit different angle. Yeah, it's communication, it's trust, and it's competency. Like those are the three pillars of leadership, and it's something that you have to prove, something that you have to exhibit every day. And the other thing is leadership it's a verb, right? Like it has to be an action word. It has to be in action. If it is some shitty phrase written on the, live, laugh, love on the side of your house, that's not going to work. Like leadership is a verb. It can't just be, it can't be email dominant. It can't be, meme driven. And it definitely can't be bugle driven. It has to be, it's a verb. It has to be an action. You have to show a commitment to those three things every single day. And when you screw up, you have to address it, and that's where that trust piece comes in, and rebuild that trust and move forward. So yeah, that would be that's leadership to me.
Okay. No. I love it. I love it. Okay.
Cool.
Let's see here. Wellness and truly being there for one another. The term brotherhood gets thrown around a lot, and there are some departments that do a phenomenal job when it comes to that word. But it's very easy. It's in this profession, and we definitely see it through social media. The fire service can come together for like beautiful, momentous occasions, but then too, we can be downright savages when it comes to Monday morning quarterbacking, not really knowing the whole scope of the situation. So, what does wellness and being there for one another look like to you?
So wellness and being there, i.e. brotherhood, one, it starts with you as an individual. And again, it's that verb. You have to display it, and you have to own it, and you have to be it. And so it's in your actions, it's in your words, it's in the text messages, when somebody had a rough call, or we have a influx of young people into our department. And so as they're navigating marriage and babies, we just had one of our guys, Jeremiah Dickinson, just had another little kiddo, man, like his wife did. It's texting him, checking in on him, like, hey, nice work, dude, this is awesome. Like, again, you've outkicked your coverage, as they say. Like, his wife's absolutely beautiful lady. He's like a solid five. So just really letting him know that he's lucky to have even been anywhere near that lady. So but when it comes to brotherhood, it's I'm lucky. My department is exemplifies that. We're very family oriented, not just in word, but in practice. So families, i.e. siblings, kids, spouses, are not just welcome, but they are like pulled into the firehouse. My kids have been riding out on the apparatus since they well before they should have. I mean, I think my daughter ran code in RBC rig at like 8 years old. Definitely not something that should ever go out towards our insurance. My battalion chief, like, he's like, hey, Moose, it's my daughter's name. He's like, Moose, you want to hop in? She's like, yeah. He's like, well, buckle up, this is gonna be awesome. And off we go. Brotherhood is relationship. It's making sure that you truly care about the people that you're working with. You don't have to be best friends with them. There are folks that I would probably not ever hang out with on the
Right,
outside, and that's okay.
right,
It doesn't mean that I don't know what's going on in their lives. It doesn't mean I'm not checking in on them. It doesn't mean that we're very well known. If somebody's moving in our department, you'll have like 15 to 20 different firemen show up with trucks and trailers, and we move their house in an hour and a half. Now, granted, during that, we're gonna put weird shit inside of the, inside of that. I think at one point, one of my chiefs moved, and we showed up, and we snagged like an old Christmas tree that he had. It was like around that time of year. We packed it, and then we planted it in his new house, just to like, and it was dead as shit. It was hilarious. Like, dug it up, shoved it in his front yard, didn't say anything. Like a month later, he's like, "Why do I have a Christmas tree?" Like, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. No, it is truly, it's just pouring into these other folks, being connected with them. And just wanting the best for them and looking out for them. And it looks different all the time. It looks different. We have new generations coming in. it's something we need to be aware of. And also, I think it's beaten to death. The new firefighters that we have are brilliant. They're super smart, really, really physically capable. And no, they're not like carpenters and plumbers and these things, like, the old tradesmen that came in before. Yeah, but and also like they can run circles around me on, on a computer. Oh, and also they have a degree and they're, they can write really well. And yeah, you just it is looking for the best out of them, and then and just trying to build the team around that. Our department, when it comes to mental health, the fire service has really focused on that in the last, let's call it the last 10 years. I could be off. I think the pendulum, much like with RIT, hazmat, right? Name it. Like it like pegs really, really far on one side, and it gets it's probably too much. It really, and I'm speaking to that broadly, right? We get such a, I guess speaking to firefighter safety. Years ago, it became we're far more important. Everyone has to come home, and the citizenry was put on the back burner, right? Like that's how far we went with that. And now we've really pegged it to the other side, where it's like, it's for them, which is phenomenal. Aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. And we talked, you and I talked about what that means to me. This being aggressive for the sake of aggressive is a miss as well. Doing it because you know what the hell you're doing and you're doing it for the right reasons, game on. Get after it, get dirty. If if you get boogered up doing it, like that's part of the gig. But when it comes to mental health, mental well-being, family, brotherhood, our department does really well with that. Our chief is open, he's available. Really good, like honest, honest man that is really just looking for the best for his people. Yeah, it's just it's relationship. I think brotherhood is relationship. We do it well. We could always do it better. I think that we as soon as guys retire, there's that chasm that kind of develops. We have retired breakfasts where, every month guys come in. Our retirees are always always welcome in the fire station. We call them, we want them to be there, we want them to come and have dinner with us, throw down coffee with us and do the thing. But we could do better at that. I'm nearing not necessarily the end of my career, but I am looking at that, and this is all I've ever known. So yeah, to not have that connection is going to be devastating for me. So I hope to see us do better at that. If anything, on just like on a selfish level, like I don't know anything different than the firehouse. Like this is these, these are my people. You and I have never met formally, but like I could come and hang out at your house tomorrow and be completely welcome just because we share the same background, right? And I feel that way with firefighters across the country. And so, yeah, I think it's just being being active and pursuing brotherhood, and it starts with yourself. It starts with your own actions and what you're doing. And when we look at what our department is missing, I think we need to look inward and say, what the hell am I not doing? And that's really the only place you can make change, yourself and your company. And hopefully that moves out broadly across the shift and then broadly to the rest of your department. So I guess that'd be my take on it. Yeah. So hopefully there's an answer somewhere in there in my reading.
No, it was good. It was good. It was good. Okay. Last question I always like to ask the guests. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up? Like right now, you're currently, you're getting ready to get made to the BC role, but it's all said and done, where would you like to see yourself?
Are we talking like
It could
in
be
like a
ranked within the department,
okay,
life in general, but like, where would you like to be?
Just speaking to my family, we haven't really hit on that. I have two like absolutely brilliant kiddos. My son just accepted a full ride offer for a call to play college soccer in Canada, and my daughter is a high-end athlete. She's doing her thing too. And so on a family level, just being as tight as I can with my wife. She's in the corporate world now. Just making sure I'm everything that they need me to be. Like that's the biggest piece for me. Being the man I should be in their lives, and then also the friend that that I should be to the other. I'm mainly hanging out with other firemen. That's really, my wife says I have what was it? What's the term she uses? Oh man, anyone who's not a fireman, it's like an inadvertent friend or like an anomaly friend for me. And I've got a couple bros that I like really, really that I care deeply for, and they're not in the fire service. And so, oh, an unlikely friend. She calls them unlikely friends. And they're just absolutely phenomenal. So just being the man I should that I need to be for them is massive. And obviously to my parents, my extended family. When it comes to the fire service, I think the biggest piece, you know, like just in retirement, I don't know what it looks like after battalion chief. I never expected, nor did I want to become a battalion chief. I used to say, like, if you're at a bar in Mexico, like a swim-up bar, like, would you rather swim up and sit next to a you know, like a 25-year, you know, admin chief, or like a 25-year, like, backstep fireman? Like, backstep fireman all day. Like, the admin chief, I'm gonna move forward. I may buy him a shit drink, but the backstep fireman, that's the guy that I'm gonna, that's who I wanna chat with. So my hope is that, you know, however my career ends up, that the fireman, you know, that when I leave, I'm looked at as somebody who was very competent in his job, loved the job, gave back. I think what my department has missed out on is the old heads, and you talked about that earlier, that left, a lot of them left antagonistic towards our admin and antagonistic even towards the career field. I think with a lack of taking care of themselves, they just their cup got so full, they're just like, they started to hate, right? And they're really good firemen. They'd seen a lot of fire. They'd done a lot of things, but we missed out on their wisdom. We missed out on all the mistakes they've made and all the successes they had. So I hope that when I leave, that I'm looked at as a really competent fireman who loved the job, who had integrity to his family and to his job, and passed on all the things that that I've learned. Like, that's what I want to be known as. The rank thing has no bearing on me at all. Not at all, actually. The battalion chief is awesome because it allows me to make a shift-wide change, hopefully for the better, right? Like, that's the avenue that is for me. It's not the rank, it's the avenue for me to make change and to make it the place that I would want to work, and the place where folks can come and kick ass and take names, and really be, yeah, just be just blue collar, just dirty, grimy firemen that love their job. Like, that's what I want. And so if I can, at the end of my career, if that's what I've hopefully done, then like I'm a happy guy. I'm so happy. So when it comes to the admin side, I don't know, man. Like, that's such another world to me. Yeah, my Excel skills are garbage, right? Like, I can click away at the computer a bit, but like, yeah, no, man, I've grown up in the fire service. I'm really good at breaking stuff, not so good at making stuff. So yeah, I love this job with all my heart. I love the people I work with, and yeah, when I leave, I just hope that that's the legacy that I have. So, but yeah. So, and I want to thank you. I really value what you're doing. It's a big deal, man. It's a big deal. And you know, I've shared a couple text messages on a couple different things, and hopefully that continues. Hopefully you can make it out. Actually, it'd be really cool for you to come out to March Mayhem or something. You got a place to stay here. Yeah, you're a Beauvais. Like, it's easy. You just come right into the house, right? So yeah, bring your family along. They can check out what it is, what's out here in Idaho. But March Mayhem is a really cool deal. We have some great speakers, some really great hands-on stuff, and yeah, they're doing a great job with that. And yeah, you're always welcome to come right out. I did get to go right out in West Metro in Colorado for part of our Battalion Chief ODP. It was our like beta group for that. And man, just getting out and riding with another department and seeing what they're doing—that's actually a phenomenal department. West Metro blew my mind. They are doing the thing, man. The battalion, or their deputy chiefs there, or deputy or division chief. Yeah, I mean, the guys I rode with were like 35-year guys, and you would have thought they were backstep, like first year firemen. Like, just stoked about the job, stoked about their people. The guy I rode with actually knew the name and the spouse's name and the kid's name of every single fireman that we went on. We went to like eight different stations, and that guy knew every single person. And it was awesome because it wasn't an act. It wasn't like part of his shtick. It was because he gave a shit. And I took a ton from him. He was all three of their A, B, and C chiefs were, I got to meet each one of them, and they were in their own right the most outstanding individuals. West Metro was phenomenal. Really, really cool department, man. They're bigger department, but they had that they felt like my department, like a 4 or 5, you know, 5 or 6 station department. Like they were just, yeah, they got after it. It was cool, man. So getting out right along with other departments and just seeing, you know, what's going right and what you can improve in your own department is massive. And so, yeah, I'd love to have you up, man. You want to come out? Yeah, it'd be a blast. So, yeah, I mean, you can hang out with Haskins. Obviously, that's the guy you want to hang out with. That guy's way more accomplished, all those things. But if you need a guy to work out with, it's like not super suit. Like I'm like halfway fit. He's a unit. You know, if you want a guy that you can probably beat in most things, I'll be right there with you, and you can have success there. So, yeah.
No. I mean, but before I say this, I'm going to go back to the last question I asked. I found it very important that you mentioned that first and foremost, you know, you're a father, you're a husband, you're a leader to, you know, within your household. And to me, that's one of the things that can get easily lost, because when you love the job so much, it's like you get tunnel vision and you forget like the family aspect because you want to get so good at the job.
Yeah, for sure. This is a conversation I've had numerous times, both presently and in the past. being a good fireman is not like, that's not enough, right? Like you have guys that have their family on lockdown. Like they are phenomenal and they're just absolute shit ass firemen. Mm-hmm. And then you have the opposite too. And for me, that does not work. Like you can't be a phenomenal fireman and not have your shit together at home, because that means that you don't have integrity to like who you are or what you're doing. And it goes the other way as well. And that's difficult. It's super difficult. And for me personally, as I've been pursuing the fire service with like absolute reckless abandon, not making sure that my family still is a priority meant that I just didn't sleep a lot is really what it came down to. And just making sure I was always present. And, you know, my wife said it really succinctly recently. She said, you work more now than you ever have. And then you also take off more time than you ever have. And so I'm picking up overtime. I'm hundreds of hours of coursework already this year in just based on command courses, things like that. And also like, I haven't missed any of my daughter's, you know, away tournaments. Like I'm headed to Reno coming up here. It means I'm taking off time. I'm doing the thing, but like, that is what I should be doing, right? Like I only have so much time with my daughter, with my son and with my wife. And if there's anything I think that, you know, we can all agree on as a fire service is that nothing's promised. And so that time is so very important. And also I have to make sure that I am a, you know, competent professional, you know, captain that people want to work for. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't say it's a balance, right? I wouldn't, because it's not 50-50. There's times where one's taking far more and there's times where one's taking far more. Yeah, it's relationship, man. It's just like, I know you're a married guy, right? There's mm-hmm. times where you're firing all cylinders and you're taking up a bunch of slack for your wife, because that's what you should be doing. And vice versa, where like there's times where like you're hammered, man, and your wife is a rock star. It's the same thing in the fire service. There's times where you're all in, and it's like with battalion chief, like I was so all in that I was like a hermit, man. Like I was very single-mindedly focused, and yeah, my family probably didn't see me as much. And also it is leading us into the next phase of our life and allowing us to move forward and do the thing. Right. So, yeah, you can't be one or the other. And yeah, you need to focus on both, which is, it's a heavy lift, man, but both things are worthwhile and things that are important. It takes work and it takes energy and it's the grind and it's deserving. Right. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So, no, I love it.
Cool.
And as far as what we talked about here just a moment ago before I had you go back to that, I think it'd be cool. I definitely am open. My wife's always open to go visit wherever, but I think
Yeah.
it'd be cool too. Like if I do come over there and I come visit your department, you throw your whole department for a loop when you introduce my name, and they're gonna look at you like he's
Oh yeah.
probably jerking our chain, right?
No. And we need to go with that as far as possible. As far as possible. Right? Like, yeah, this is Diddy. Like, I've mentioned him before, but yeah, like, which side of the family is he from? It's like, what? And then just like, what is that? I don't understand what you're, I don't know. Yeah. Absolutely awesome. Yeah, no, for sure, man. Yeah. And the cool thing is like you have gear. Like your name's already on my, yeah, it's all the gear is there. So I got a nice red helmet, right? Says Beauvais on it. You're there. So it's absolutely awesome, man. Yeah. So no, we'd love to have you out, man. And our apartment is, yeah, we're super open. Come out and ride out and do the thing. And definitely the March Mayhem thing would be rad. You can, I've got an extra
Okay.
bedroom. You can definitely crash out and we'll talk to Gino. Gino Galli is the bro at Treasure Valley Fools. He's the president, and I'm sure we could probably get something squared away.
Okay.
Yeah, he'd be a great guy to interview. I actually have another dude that I think would be really rad for you to interview as well. So,
Okay. All right.
but
We'll talk about
cool.
that. We'll
Awesome.
talk about that off air for
Cool.
sure.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
But no, I appreciate you taking the time to come out and do this interview, spend some time out of your day to do this. I love the message behind it. I think that when you do officially get made, the way your mindset is, I'm pretty sure you're going to be an awesome battalion chief because of the fact that you're like, not only you're going to talk the talk, but we're going to walk the walk. I'm going to be in gear as well as my entire shift and crew, and we're going to go out there and we're going to better ourselves. And I think we need more of that when it comes to the battalion chief role. Like I said, I'm not trying to take away
No.
that side does have paperwork involved, but I feel like sometimes the paperwork gets a little too much and the fire side goes away where you're still a firefighter at heart. A battalion chief can pull up to something and his crew's not there yet, and it's like, what do you do now?
Yeah, and we've actually made that mindset change. We just recently put a pack on. We had our turnouts, but we didn't have a pack on. We were just in gosh. Went and saw Kurt Isaacson actually as part of our battalion chief ODP. We went out and did his coursework in Florida. He's Escambia County, BC. And that dude is, I mean, you talk about aggressive. That dude's all in, right? And so based on that course, we have now we've got irons. So we are like. You see what good looks like, and you're like, awesome, cool. Like, let's do this. And we had multiple battalion chiefs that went back there, myself included. It was like, okay, yeah, no, this needs to make change. And so, yeah, I mean, if I'm first, if you're first on, you should be making change, right? And it all depends on what the circumstances are, all those things. But if you're not equipped, i.e., no pack, no tools, well, now you're limited. And you might have that opportunity to make the grab and
That's
to make
right.
a life and death difference. And if you're not prepared to do that, then you yeah, you're not giving them the opportunity. And that's unacceptable. And so yeah, man, it's taking best practice from other places and putting it into practice in your department. So yeah, I'm excited at the opportunity, man. And yeah, I guess I'd be remiss. There's actually a battalion chief out of Boise Fire. His name's Phil Desolate. Absolute stud. He just got promoted, and that guy is doing that, and he's making huge change in his department. He's one of my best friends, absolute mentor to me, and he was actually the one that kind of made it possible in my mind to do the BC thing because I saw him making the changes that I wanted to make, and I was like, oh, okay, it can be done. And so that guy is absolute, just a stud, man. Great family man, phenomenal fireman, and he's doing the thing. So the changes are happening out there. There's a lot of really good departments making moves. So
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Like I said, Frank, I appreciate you coming on, man, spreading the good word. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
me too. Thank you. I hope people got a little something from it. So I appreciate your time.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.